Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you are here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same. One of which is the Hydra that we just hosted. It was an absolute blast. So stay tuned for the release of the 2024 date because you won't want to miss it.
Speaking of not missing things, for now, go ahead and mark your calendars for September 16th when we host the final countdown. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits, and we'll be there to celebrate it with you.
So share with your friends, check us out on theultrarunningguys.com, and you can always check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up.
Like, my number one priority is like allowing this awesome sport that we're in to change me for the better, to teach me all the valuable lessons that it has to teach us if we're open to it. But if all we're focused on is our pace, our timing, and our standings, you're going to miss out on so many opportunities to become a better human being and engage with the people that are around you.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And first, to the Ultra Running Guys family, thank you so much for taking the time, for stopping by. We appreciate you more than you know. If you haven't already, we would love a review. Tell your friends, give us a star rating, all that good stuff, if you're finding value. And speaking of value, let's get right to the guest. So here's the deal. Tonight's guest is somebody who, from the outside looking in, has highly developed the skill of suffering well. And that is part of the reason we're so excited about this conversation. We first connected with this guy in 2020 and have watched his progression as he's made a name for himself, particularly on the unforgiving Murder Mile course, which is home to both the Mid-State Mile and the Tennessee Mile races. So not long after going head-to-head with our previous guest, Justin Hamilton, in the 2022 Mid-State Mile, tonight's guest went on to win the Mighty Mosquito 100 miler outright and then set the 40-hour course record for the 2022 Tennessee Mile with over 107 miles completed and 33,000 feet of gain on a 1.1-mile loop course.
That's kind of stupid.
So I'm excited to talk about that. He's also recently finished the Zion 100K, which Jeff ran as well, in 12 hours and 54 minutes. And now has his sights set on leaving it all on the course at the 2023 Mid-State Mile, which is taking place on Saturday, June 16th. And we can't wait to talk about it. So stick around to hear what it takes to push yourself beyond what you may think is possible, his tips for taking on courses with monster elevation, and why he believes that strength and mobility should be a staple in everybody's training plan. And with that, Aaron Dana, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, guys. Great to be here, man. It's been a long time coming. I've been listening to your show for a long time, and it's just cool to be on.
Well, this is special for me, man, because again, this is the first time of us kind of talking directly. You just saw Jeff at Zion.
Met in person. It was the first time I got to meet Aaron in person. He and I have known each other since at least early 2020 through coaching connections as well as through social media. So to see him in person was kind of cool. I'm definitely taller than him, which is not a shock for anybody because I'm taller than most people other than giraffes.
He has a much better mustache, though.
He does. It's legit. And it was in person, too. I mean, when I first saw it, I thought, should I grab it? Because it's nice.
You should have taken it for a ride on the trails. I would have pulled you along.
It would have been helpful because I was dying and he was crushing it, which you did. You had a phenomenal performance at Zion 100K. You just smoked the course. You may not think you did, but looking at your times and your splits, you crushed the course. And I think it was well done. Not an easy one. And you did it well in that race. And you should be proud of what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a totally different environment, too, coming from. I mean, I'm in Rochester, New York. It was like in the, 40s and 50s here. And then we go to desert, full sun exposure. And it's like, what, in the 70s there probably that day?
It was dry, man.
It was so dry and hot.
The dryness just
sucks all the moisture out of you. Mm-hmm. You're just like instantly dehydrated.
Yeah. That was my biggest issue, but you did great, man.
Thanks.
So that's actually a good intro, right? Because the things that we want to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about Mid-State Mile, which is not dry, you know, but it is hot. You're up in New York. So we're going to be talking about some of that stuff tactically. How are you preparing, especially kind of after the experience last year? But before we do that, it's so interesting to learn that really your running started in 2019. I would have assumed that you had been around quite a bit before that. How did you first get into, like, what was your background before 2019? How did you end up here?
I mean, as far as like athletic history, I grew up playing soccer for most of my life, some football, but mostly soccer, but never really did any running other than some just simple, probably like 5-6 mile runs to just get in shape for soccer. So, I mean, I had a pretty good stint of not really doing anything athletically. You know, I stopped playing soccer in probably my mid-20s. So I probably had a decade of like raising kids, working an active job, and, you know, getting into my early and mid-30s, like I started to feel a change. You know, my body was changing. I was feeling older. And I'm like, I need to really start doing something to not feel so old. 2019, my buddy Brandon started doing some hikes up in the Adirondack Mountains, which are pretty rugged and they're pretty tough East Coast mountains. They're not huge, but they're super gnarly, super rugged. They just go straight up a mountain. You know, the way the water goes down is the way you climb up. So it's the quickest way up, but it's tough. So I did a hike with him in the fall of 2019, and it was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. My body was destroyed. My legs hurt so much, but I was addicted to that feeling of persevering through pain and suffering. And it's pretty much what you feel in ultra. I felt that day. So I got hooked on wanting to hike these mountains, and I'm like, well, I should probably start to get in shape to try to get in better shape for these mountains. So I started trail running, which I legitimately did not know trail running was a thing. I got online. I'm like, oh, there's trail running podcasts. What's this? And I started listening to some trail running podcasts. And I'm like, what are these ultras? 50 miles, 100 miles. I had no idea that people did more than a marathon. I guess my personality, I just got hooked, man, because I loved the challenge. It was something that I needed in my life. I didn't realize I needed it until I found it. And I'm like, wow, this is what I've been needing in my life. This is the type of fitness, the type of challenge, just the way I'm wired. It's what I need. I need something that challenges me, something to strive for, and something that causes me to have to be tough and resilient and gritty. So, I mean, that's kind of it in a nutshell of how I got into it. It's nothing special, but the combination of the grit and toughness that's required, but then also being in nature, being on the trails. I don't mind running on the roads if I have to, but I prefer just being out in the woods in all types of weather, right? In every season, winter, summer, and seeing the full scope of nature is something that I really have come to love.
I have a quick follow-up then, just because I have known your history a little bit. So you said in 2019, you started off with Brandon doing a lot of hiking and trying to get to quite a few of these peaks and stuff in your area. But you and I came across one another in the beginning of 2020, and you had not done an ultra at that point, but you started training for ultras. And the reason we came across one another is not just because of social media, but because we actually ended up with the same coach. I had signed on with a coach at that same time, and it happened to be the same coach you signed on with. And what spurred that? Like, what brought you to the point that you decided after hiking, you listened to some podcasts on trail running, but now you want to get a coach? Where was that jump? Like, what created that idea?
So the jump came just hearing about ultras and hearing stories, just like you guys have people on your podcast telling those stories of what normal everyday people accomplish. And I thought, I think I could do this. I think, and I did have a local friend, a guy at my church that through talking with him, he had done some ultras, and he's like, oh man, you can totally do it if you train for it. So when I found the coach, it was early 2020. I had signed up for, and obviously we know how 2020 went, but I signed up for a 50K in the spring and I signed up for a 50 miler in the summer. And I thought, if I want to do these, I need to find a coach that's really going to help me to achieve these goals. And I think I found him through Brandon Kreitz. Is that his last name? Do you remember Brandon?
Yeah.
He was doing a bunch of running at that time. So I found him on social media. He told me the coach he worked with. And so I just thought, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I need to find a coach. But I had already signed up for some trail races. I just jump all in.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way you were talking about it earlier, but I connected, because actually one of the things we had was why ultras, you know, because there's just normal running, right? But when you started talking about being drawn to the suffering, being drawn to kind of that feeling, which I relate to, even though sometimes I want to stay away from it, but there's a part of it that pulls me in. I was like, okay, so that makes sense. That's part of your personality. But I also think it's interesting that you had the insight to be like, hey, I want to go to somebody else to help with this process. Because there's a lot of us. I mean, I went for a long time without a coach, right? There's the research, all kinds of things. So I'm interested. I know you have a different coach now than you did then. But how has coaching, like, has coaching made a big impact for you? And for anybody listening, is it something that you personally would recommend?
I do, especially if you're just getting started. At some point, I probably won't need a coach, but right now I don't even have to think about it. It's my training is there. I can just do it. It's one less thing I have to think about. And obviously I can give input and, you know, give feedback with how my body's doing. If I feel like I want to do more or less, or if I want to put in more strength training or whatever I want to work on, it's totally customizable, but I don't have to sit there and program it myself. I'm not saying I'm lazy. I want to put in the work and I don't want to have to think about structuring it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So if someone likes structuring things, for me, I don't really like planning. So if someone likes planning, maybe they don't need a coach, or maybe they could have a coach who's more of a consultant, or have some good running friends that can help them put together a training plan. But for me, I don't even have to think about it. I just look at my training plan and there's what I'm doing today and I just do it. So I would definitely recommend a coach. There's, in finding a coach, I think that has a little bit more experience in the type of like ultra running that you want to do. Like, so for me, I want to do harder ultras with more vert. And I think that it takes a different approach than someone that's just trying to go out there and crush and like set course records and running really fast. I don't mind running fast, but when I'm doing these ultras, I'm not pushing the limits. So I think it's good to find a coach that matches the type of running that you want to be doing, type of races you want to be doing, and probably find someone that has experience in running those as well.
I mean, I think that's an important point. We've obviously talked to quite a few guys that have different ultra experiences and different desires on the types of races they pursue. And some are looking to set course records, or some are looking to do an FKT, and others are looking to do these mountain ultras, or some are doing sky races like Hillary Allen and stuff. And there is this buffet or variety of different types of ultras that exist, and they draw people for different reasons. There's backyards like you like to do it that are different than a standard 100-mile race. And I think it's important what you're saying, that if you're looking to get a coach, you should have somebody that is comfortable designing a plan for the type of race that you're putting together. And so if you're or type of race you're wanting to participate in. And so if you're looking for a coach, you should ask those types of questions if they've got experience in those. Doesn't mean that they can't give you a plan, but it does give you somebody that may have access to experiences and a knowledge base that is available to you. And if you try to do it for yourself, you may not have a lot of personal experience. And so I think having a coach is a great idea. Everybody on this call, the three of us have a coach. And so we've all have them for different reasons, but I don't think I'm lazy, but I do think I prefer the fact that my coach puts my plan together.
Yeah.
And takes input, you know, we can have that conversation.
Exactly.
I'm interested, man, because you said that you want to do it. And so Jeff made a good point. There's these different types, and we've actually talked about, right? So we had Hillary Allen on the show, and it's like, hey, Hillary Allen in the thing that she likes to do, is nearly unbeatable, right? Mm-hmm. Sky races. But if you put her on a course next to Camille for something with speed,
like a track,
she's not competitive. Mm-hmm. But you put Camille on a mountain race, she's probably not going to keep up with Hilly, right? And so there's these things. Clearly, it seems like, and you mentioned, you're drawn to lots of vert, the mountain. What is it about kind of the mountain ultra mm-hmm. compared to, I want to go do a 200 miler or something, right? Because there's other ways to make it hard. Because the word he used was harder. And I thought, well, there's a lot of ways to make things harder. Mm-hmm. But when you said that, you said vert. What is it that draws you to that?
Well, for one, you know, you can go a little slower. It's justified to have to go slower. There's more hiking involved. And I like hiking. It's actually a skill that I have.
I like that you called it a skill.
It is a skill.
Yeah.
It's totally a skill. All vert's not created equal. Vert in the Adirondacks is different than vert in Tennessee. And there's something about ruggedness, vert. It just adds a whole other layer of complexity. It's just like when you have the elements, rain, snow, wind, that's another element that you have to overcome. So I look at vert as something that it's another element that you have to overcome, that you have to train for specifically. And I think it helps you get really strong. I'm not saying you can't get strong running flat, but I like it because there's a variety of how it targets your body too. It's not just flat running, same muscle groups. When you're doing vert, there's flat sections, there's rolling sections, there's steep sections. There's a lot of variety. Even mid-state mile, there's some runnable sections. Even though there's a couple of big climbs, there's steep incline, steep decline. There's nice rolling, flowing stuff that you can run. I like variety, but I think it's just the added challenge that vert can give. Now, I haven't done any gnarly races yet. There's a couple that have been on my radar that I'm honestly terrified of. There's one in particular you've never even heard of. It's called the Jigger Johnson 100. They have 100K and 100. I want to say the cutoff is like 50 hours for the 100. It's apparently probably harder than Hard Rock. It has over 30,000 feet for the 100, but it's rugged, remote, like wilderness. It's like it's a true mountain like ultra in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. I don't know if you've ever been up there, but it's crazy technical, lots of rocks, lots of roots. That thing scares me because I've known some people that have done the 100K, and I think the fastest time was somewhere in the 20, low 20s for the fastest finishing time. So think 20 hours to do 100K. That's a pretty challenging 100K for experienced runners. So that's something that I would say, something like that or Hard Rock is, I haven't gotten there yet. I don't mind vert, but adding vert with technical mountain running and remoteness where it's more like a self-sufficient type of thing, like that still scares me. And I want to do it. I want to build up to it, but yeah.
Perspective is everything, right? Because you're mm-hmm. like, oh, there's these things that scare me and I just do this stuff. And I bet you there's probably people that have run Hard Rock. They'd be like, I don't know about mid-state. I don't know about just doing a loop course like that. And so again, I think that some of the stuff that you're doing, people would consider hard. I look at you and go, dude, the training that you're doing is pretty intense. We're going to talk about it, or at least it seems pretty intense compared to most days I'm walking out my front door, I'm running flat miles, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm like, okay, this guy is living a different life than me in terms of training, but it's also why we want to talk about mid-state. It's coming up. It's your focus. You had, you know, a big race there last year. We want to dig into that a little bit, but we want to take advantage because of the type of training that you do to also, for the listeners, get into some tactical stuff, because we know you're also doing probably some of the extras that not all of us do that we should be. So mid-state mile, we talked about it in the intro. It is what they call the murder mile, right? So it's a 1.1 mile loop, 340 feet of gain. And the first time I ever heard about it, I think we mentioned this on the episode with Justin Hamilton, was Chad Wright, Jesse Itzler. You know, I was following Jesse Itzler. That popped up and it was like, what are these guys doing, right? Everybody's hot. They're sweaty. It's a last man standing format for mid-state. And yeah, essentially you line up until you're done, right? Now it does have a couple, if you're familiar with the Backyard Ultra, very similar format with a smaller course, except you guys, every 12 hours, it sounds like you get a little bit of a longer break, right? 20 minutes.
So yeah, you basically get like a free loop. You know what I mean? So every loop is 20 minutes. So every 12 hours, there's a 20-minute intermission. And they do that to extend the longevity of the runners so that it could go longer.
Something else, too, that we thought was interesting. So poles, you can only use poles after 12 hours, right? And I would imagine that those things are pretty helpful, but that's just another part of the format. I'm interested. We know you like the mountains. Got that part. But this is a different animal, right? 1.1 mile loop over. What draws you to mid-state?
So what initially drew me there was I saw Jesse, I saw Chad run it the first year. It looked like a proper challenge. It looked like something at that time where I was in my journey, that scared me. Mid-state scared me. And I thought, I need to do this because it scared me. What keeps me coming back is, how many races do you get to run where every single loop you're starting with everybody? Everybody. Even though throughout the loop you might be running a different pace, you're never alone. Maybe near the end if you're struggling and there's a few people ahead of you, but you get to spend so much time with people. You get to know people. You've got 4 or 5 minutes you're spending climbing this big hill. You're just talking with people. You're getting to know them. The community out there, it's hard to come by in other races, because you guys probably both know you can spend a lot of time in an ultra by yourself, unless you have a pacer that you brought, but that's somebody you already know. Mid-state, it's become a family because the same people come back and run it every year. You get to see their progress. You want everybody to do their best out there. It's not like a normal race where you're trying to win. It doesn't matter if you run that loop faster or not. You're both going to start another loop. You just want them to keep going. And with any last man standing, if you really want to go far, you need a really good core group of people that can go the distance. If everyone drops out at 60, 70 miles and you're the last man standing, I mean, that's fun, but like, you didn't really get to push your limits. But this is the type of format that if you have a good core group of people that actually encourages each other and challenges each other to go another lap, you get to see everybody pushing their limits. And maybe someone's limit is 50 miles and that's insane for them. You get to help them go one more lap and see them dig deep and push themselves. I mean, there was a dude that was like sleepwalking the first year I did it. And he just kept stumbling through and he just kept, you're like, how is this guy still doing laps? Like, you, he didn't even look like he was there, but he kept going. And it was so incredible to see. And you get to see that every single mile. You get to reset who's still with us, and you get to challenge these people and encourage these people. So it's, for me, it's about the community. It's about the brotherhood and the sisterhood. It's just, it's a family out there. And everybody wants everybody to go as far as they possibly can. I mean, Luke Bolschweiler was out there giving people hiking, trekking pole tips and how to use the right technique and like helping them on their power hiking because he's just a pro at it. Like, where else are you going to see Luke Bolschweiler encouraging how to power hike and use their trekking poles? Like, nowhere else you're going to see that. He's in the lead pack all the time. I could gush about mid-state for a while, but I would say that's it. That's not even a nutshell. That's a pretty good explanation of it.
I did a couple of them. I did about 3 laps, I think, because before the race, they did a 5K. They let anyone do a 5K, right? I think the best part of it is the hill. Once you go up the hill, you just have walking and you can talk to people, and actually had pretty good conversations. It was actually funny. I actually beat someone. I remember when the race actually started, I think he dropped out because I was in front of him in sandals, and I don't think he made it and he missed the 20 minutes that he had. Yeah. And I feel bad for him that 11-year-old beat him in sandals.
Special cameo from Aaron's son, great. Benjamin. That's fun.
Benjamin. And honestly, like, we go as a family, they get to experience it. You know, my wife crews there, and it's just, it's a great experience for us as a family. And yeah, last year they had a crew of 5K. So all my three kids ran the 5K. Benjamin completed the 5K, so we did three laps. My daughter Elsie completed two laps, and then my youngest daughter Rosie completed one lap.
That's awesome.
But Ben started with a shirt on. And then the second loop he's coming around, the shirt's off. The third loop around, the shirt's tied around his head.
He's working.
That's funny.
I mean, it's like that's a tough 5K. So yeah,
I'm gonna take you back to something you said a second ago that I'm just curious about. I'm going to push in for fun, for my side, at least for fun. Definitely love the idea that, you know, everybody's out there to encourage one another. To see how far everybody can go. And you're right. I mean, in any of these types of events that are a last man standing format, the winner is only going to be as good and go as only as far as those around them push them, right?
Yeah.
But at some point for the mid-state, you're going to want to be done personally. Okay. That idea of encouraging your competitors is cool unless you're trying to win. At what point do you switch your mindset game to try to win as versus simply to encourage?
My goal this year, I would like to win, yes. But I don't want to get down to two guys and then the one guy just drops off because he thinks I'm stronger or whatever. Eric Keenlay is someone, he got second last year. Him and I have been talking a bunch. And I'm not saying it's going to get down to the both of us, but like, we both want to do something special on that course too. You know, when you see like Courtney's or all those guys that set those amazing records on last man standing courses, do they want it to be done? Sure. But they also want to break a world record. So there's something additional that's driving them than just winning, because they need that other person to keep going so they can break a world record. I haven't gotten there yet, so I don't know what my mentality is going to be, but I know personally being an encouragement and being who God has made me to be is not going to make me weak in that moment. Last year, I went in wanting to win, but I went in with a wrong mentality, because my mentality was I had to look at everyone as a competition, as my opposition. And I did not thrive in that kind of mindset. I'm just not wired like that. So what's it going to take to win this mentally? I don't know, but I'm hoping that I can find it. I'm hoping that I can tap into it. For me, I need to be tapping into the mental and spiritual energy that fuels me to go as far as I can. And that is what fuels me. Like when I ran the Mighty Mosquito, I was literally preaching to anyone that was running with me, not preaching about Jesus necessarily, but I was just preaching good, positive energy into existence. I was saying it to them, but I was saying it to myself, because I need to encourage other people because I need to be encouraged in that moment. That fueled me through some of the toughest parts of that race, because that race was a hot one. I wanted to quit several times, but you can be fierce and be strong and not have to be a jerk about it and not have to withhold anything from anybody. Because if it's down to two people, man, what's going to keep me in it the longest is staying mentally motivated and mentally and spiritually sharp and in tune with who I am. And honestly, I don't know if you guys have won a race, but it doesn't really do anything for you. You don't feel that much better about yourself. It's not like, finally, I feel validated as a ultra runner or this or that. My brain will still find ways to say, you know what? You could have done better. You could have done this. It's not that impressive. So my own brain like sabotages me and I'm like, you know what? Winning is great. I'm not saying it's not, but it doesn't feel as good as you think it does. For me, it's about who I am out there in any of these races. And I think that's what ultra running is a good reminder for me. It's about who you are in the process. It's about what is this sport doing to make you a better person? Like my number one priority is like allowing this awesome sport that we're in to change me for the better, to teach me all the valuable lessons that it has to teach us if we're open to it. But if all we're focused on is our pace, our timing, and our standings, you're going to miss out on so many opportunities to become a better human being and engage with the people that are around you. Because Zion, Jeff, one of the most memorable things from that race is I talked some dude out of quitting at mile 38 after that climb. He was done. And I was like, dude, you're going to be so proud that you persevered and finish this race. Mm-hmm. Like you have to keep going, dude. And guess what? He finished before I did. Like he passed me at aid station and he saw me at the end. And he said, dude, I was done if you hadn't said that to me. So that's why I do it. That's why we're out there. You know what I mean? And like, I saw the opportunity and I encouraged the dude. He finished in front of me. Who freaking cares? I'm glad. You know, I'm glad that I sparked something inside of him because I know that I've received that from other people too. So it's just a great opportunity to like let this sport teach you all the lessons that it has to teach you.
It's interesting though, because one of the things that I think will be a strength of yours going into it, having done the backyards, is the second that it's not about you, then mentally, if you think that you can't beat somebody else, then why, you know, I mean, that's where the doubt creeps in. Almost like you said last year, hey, these people are my competition. Now I'm having a tough day. Do I think I can keep up with my competition? Well, that's a different thought than, okay, I need to get the best out of myself today. You know, it's one of those like, yes, I want to win. Mm-hmm. But to your point, probably the best way to win is to not worry about anybody else. Bring them along for the ride. And so I love the way that you're thinking.
Well, the other thing is that I find interesting, because you've actually talked about this yourself, having done backyards, is that those who have experienced this type of format, the seasoned, if you will, last man standing type events, often look at the first 10 hours, 12 hours, first 75 miles or 100 mile points as being, we just got to go through the time until we get to the hard work. And that seems to be what I even get this. He goes, you know, for the first bit, in the first 50 miles, we're just kind of going through the process.
I do have a question because I start to dread that. I've told people, hey, backyard or last man standing is a game of patience. And people don't recognize how much of a game of patience until you're 6, 8 hours in, 10 hours in. And they're like, you know, people go fast. They burn themselves out, whatever, because they can't keep the patience of like, hey, let's just keep this rhythm until it gets hard. The race doesn't, you know, quote unquote, start until you get to the point where your body should be giving out. Most people don't have the patience to get there properly.
Right.
I've actually come to dread that a little bit, right? 6 hours in, I'm like, oh gosh, how many more hours is it going to be until I get to the reason that I showed up here? That's the moment that we kind of live for, that we show up for, to get the best out of ourselves, kind of that war. And I've also found when I get there, I don't want to be there anymore. But that means that early on in the race, all that, like you said, kind of just moving through the process, walking through the steps, when you're tired, when it does start to get sore, but you know that you've got a ton left in you still. In fact, I'm running a backyard soon. And that's the part that I'm like, gosh, how many hours is it going to take for me to get to the point that I showed up for? Mm-hmm. And do I really want to go through all that just to get to where the race starts, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think especially at mid-state, those are the times where you're connecting with other people out there. Yeah. It's you're catching up with people you haven't seen. And honestly, when there's 100 people out there, I could speed up my pace a little or slow it down and hang out with a totally different crowd every single loop and catch up with some other people. So the first day goes by really quick. And you know what it's like if you're on a long run with people versus by yourself, time flies by.
Right.
So I look forward to that because there's a lot of people that I'd like to just connect, see out there. It's fun. I think it's fun, you know, because you're feeling better and you're enjoying it. At least you're enjoying it versus later. I'm not saying you don't enjoy it, but you have to dig deeper to enjoy it because right. It's hurting so much.
We want to take advantage and just kind of talk tactical stuff with you because I think that's where a lot of your strengths are. So let's start this way. What does, and we'll say as you're getting ready for mid-state, what does a typical training week look like for you now?
Typical training week. Well, number one, outside of running, you guys had Vinny on, right? The Pain Academy.
Vinny Crispino, yep.
I've been doing his program for almost a year. I'm on week 45. It's 7 days a week. Sure, I've missed some here or there, but I've been doing that religiously. And that's like a mobility, it's strength, but it's a lot of just like getting your body to go through healthy ranges of motion. So that's been a staple of my training. And I've seen huge improvements in just my overall, just how I feel, you know, the durability of things. So that's number one. I do that every day.
What's the biggest, if I were to ask something specific, is it like, because when I think about that, I think hips, because that's a lot of the areas that I have. But is there something you said, hey, from the time I've started to now, like the biggest thing I've noticed is, can you point to something or is it just overall?
I've had a lot of like low back pain and I knew it had to do with my hips, whether there was some overcompensation happening, imbalances. Like every day I would wake up feeling it. And I've probably the last month or two, like, I don't have lower back pain at all. And I've had it for years. I work an active job. So that's been huge. And it helps me to learn more about my body and my imbalances, and where the next thing I know I need to work on is my shoulders, because my shoulders are definitely don't have a really great range of motion. But for me, learning and knowing my body is huge, because if I've got low back pain, I don't want to just blow past that. What's causing it? Like, is there something I can do to improve an imbalance or a weakness? Or if there's a muscle that's not firing or firing incorrectly, what do I got to do to fix that? So my approach to my training is trying to be as in tune with my body and what it's telling me every step of the way. So Vinny's program, the Pain Academy program, has helped me to learn more about my body, my weaknesses, my imbalances. And then whenever there's a race that I have, if I have an issue, like I had IT band knee stuff at mid-state last year, which I never had before, but I've been doing a lot of work on my glute meds and some other stuff that has been helping tremendously. Like, those are weak areas of mine. So Vinny's program has been a huge staple. I do, in addition to that, I do more strength training. I try to do it at least 2 to 3 times a week. Now I'm doing it at least 3 times a week, if not 3 to 4 days a week leading up to mid-state. And then run training, Becca scheduled it out, but some of the foundations are low heart rate, long runs, keeping the easy runs super easy. And then if I'm doing any speed work, doing those pretty hard. You know what I mean? So keep the easy run super easy and give a really hard effort when I have a hard effort. And she'll have me do mile repeats, hill repeats. It's not necessarily your standard like interval training, but she'll have me do progression runs. So at least once a week, maybe in the early phases of a buildup, I'll have once or twice a week, I'll have a speed workout. And then everything else is low heart rate, easy runs, mixing in with some strength throughout the week. And then usually on the weekends is a good long run. But now it's the long runs are more like long hill repeats. Becca Jones's philosophy, my coach, is more about making sure that your body is recovering along the way from your training versus, I know some coaches like to just build up all the accumulated fatigue and then have a drop week where you supposedly recover from all of that. But what I found before was I was just injured all the time. I was always so borderline injured or injured because I wasn't really recovering and I wasn't listening to my body. over the last couple of years I've been working with Becca, I totally feel like I could do more volume, but I haven't been getting hurt. And mm-hmm. I've been feeling really strong at races. So I'm not arguing with her. Because I know I could do more, but there's that fine line between, like, some guys, I think, push that line of, like, are you doing too much? And mine's like, I'm doing enough. I'm definitely not overdoing it. And I'm supplementing with strength training, which I think is tremendous in injury prevention. One of the thoughts I have as far as training goes in ultras, you guys probably know this too, where you get to a point in a long race where you're hurting so much that you just end up walking or hiking, right? I've been finding, because I've been working on my strength, that now instead of having to walk those sections, I can still run them. Like, I ran the last 1.3 miles of Zion. They were all uphill on that mm-hmm. road. I ran that whole thing to finish that race. And I know there was other guys that were death marching that thing. They were done. So for me, in a long race, if I can build the durability in my legs so that instead of having to hike and just death march it, I can still be running. Like, that's what it's all about. I'm not running fast, but I'm running. If I'm running 4.5 miles an hour, 5 miles an hour, that's great. So I think the low heart rate, what's kind of funny is she has me train a lot in like zone two, right? So like 130, 135 heart rate. And for my Mighty Mosquito, my average heart rate was like around 130, 135. I was running that thing and I'm looking at my heart rate, 135. My body is so conditioned to running that heart rate, and I can run mm-hmm. comfortably and I'm not overexerting myself. So low heart rate training is huge. It takes a little bit to get acclimated to that, because obviously I can run faster than a 135 heart rate, but it takes patience to run that slow and build your aerobic foundation. So I would say the low heart rate is huge, still doing some speed work throughout the week, and then making sure that you're implementing a lot of strength work into your routine to build durability in your joints. And I think it's more of like fatigue resistance, you know, you're just building up that fatigue resistance, because that's what you feel late in a race. Your muscles are just fatigued. So doing the strength training builds up your resistance so you can handle more like late in a race.
So talked about Vinny Crispino. I'm going to drop a link because he did a quick video for us when he was on the show. So if you're listening to Vinny Crispino and you haven't listened to that episode, go check it out, because it really plays into what you're talking about. But I want to clarify, because I also want people listening to know what you're talking about. So when we talk about strength, when somebody mm-hmm. says strength training, right, that could be going in, I'm doing heavy squats. It could be band work. It could be body weight. It could be all these different things. What does strength work mean to you? And if somebody's listening, are there one or two or three kind of exercises that you could say, these have been foundational for me?
Sure. A lot of what I do is body weight. I would say I got a weight vest several months ago, so I've been doing that to add a little bit more weight, but I'm not doing dumbbells or barbells. If I am, I'm holding them in my hands. I would say split squats are very good. Lunges, I do elevated, like heel elevated squats to, you know, targets more of your quads. I've been doing I think it's Pelequin step ups. You're kind of like your foot's on a angled slant board and you're like stepping down. Mm-hmm. I've been doing those.
Did you post a video of that on your Instagram?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing that.
I've been trying to get some good activities that are targeting my quads. So just a lot of body weight stuff, man. I've been doing stuff to try to get my hip adductors. So your groin, because those have been kind of annoying me during races, which I've never experienced, but I'm like, okay, I need to target those. And then Vinny has a great hip routine. It's like hip mobility, stability. It targets everything, man. And so I'll do that like once or twice a week, because it just, I had my wife do it recently. She's like, how do you do this? This is burning. This is killing me. But now I'm like, I can crush it. I can do three sets of the thing. So yeah, man, it's a lot of like, I mean, those are like clamshells and working on your, just all of your supportive muscles. It's not like, hey, just go there and like do some deadlifts and some squats. No, like I'm hitting my legs from every different direction, trying to do some core stuff as well. So yeah, I mean, I have some weights, but I don't use them. It's just body weight. If you get some ankle weights, you can do, there's a ton of stuff you can do to build strength. And it's just about activating those muscles. I'm not trying to make these things, I'm not trying to have tree trunk legs. You know what I mean? I'm just trying to activate them, get them used to moving, get them used to the load. There's so much stuff on YouTube too.
Yeah, but I think it's great because when we talk about strength training, like you said, Jeremy, in the beginning, when you got in this section, is that a lot of people think when they hear a guest say, yeah, I do strength conditioning all the time, then that means they're going to the gym and they're adding in, you know, the full, you know, weight sets and everything to kind of exercise. But to do body weights is really all they have to do. And it can be that simple.
Well, the word that I liked that you used was activate. Mm-hmm. And because I mean, I did a running assessment today, but I've known, you know, and especially, like I said, I'm sure doing a lot of the mountain type stuff that you're doing, it helps because you're getting all those different angles. For me, I know that there are muscles that are not being activated. So something simple like clamshells or the fire hydrants, things like that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel those so much. But that is a type of strength that anybody can do. And I don't know if you have any specific kind of YouTube videos or something that you go to.
Well, first of all, Vinny has a great routine that I did. I don't know if he has any for free on YouTube. He probably does. I would check out his stuff because a lot of his stuff, he does give away a lot of like really good movement. So I would check out the Pain Academy. But everything else, like I said, like split squats, lunges, like those are all pretty basic. And you could burn yourself out pretty good on those things. It's more about just working on those imbalances, targeting and activating, like you said, all those muscles that don't always get targeted when you're specifically running. But if you're doing these long races, they will get worn out and they'll remind you that you never use those things.
So is Becca prescribing these workouts for you as part of your plan, or do you just add them in?
I just add them in. She actually has an Instagram page called Running Together. Mm-hmm. And she puts in a bunch of body weight type stuff. I've done that sometimes too, but I just found the exercises that I think are good, well-rounded, and I like them.
I guess what I'm trying to maybe discuss or understand, if you will, is people are going to ask me or ask you, even when they listen to this, they'll say, well, what days am I supposed to do that on? You know, is it on an easy day or is it on a hard day? Like, how do I know when I'm, when's a good day for me to do a leg workout, even if it is body weight that taxes my legs? Is it, you know, I'm trying to say like the timing.
I think it's usually on a hard day. My understanding is you want to recover. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to do an easy run and then a really hard leg workout. Then you're not going to be ready for your hard run the next day. So what I've been finding is like this past weekend, you know, I did my long run and then I got home and I finished off with a leg workout and I'm still feeling it. I mean, I'm still feeling it. So if I had a long day of hill repeats and I go home and I finish my legs off with some strength. Another thing that I try to do as well is I have a decline on my treadmill. I'll just do some decline. I'm going to be trying to do more of that in the next couple of weeks here before I taper, just because with mid-state, it's the downhills that will do more damage than the climbing, because the climbing is low impact. But when you're going down in a steep grade, it wears on people. People's quads burn up real quick. So I try to do some decline work as well. I've got another local runner. One of my buddies that ran Zion, he swears by decline work. He'll just get on the treadmill and run decline for 7 miles. And he swears that it helps build up the durability in his quads, because that's that fatigue resistance late in the race. Because at Zion, my quads hurt so bad after like 18 miles. Mm-hmm. that slick rock was so hard to run on. I was surprised. So I was like, dang, I need to do more decline work here. So that's another aspect of training. Like if you have access to a decline treadmill, which I do, like I think it's good to get a couple miles in on decline, that sustained impact, and it helps build up some durability. Another aspect too is I run in sandals a lot. Almost all my summer training runs, unless it's a really fast speed workout, is in sandals.
What kind of sandals?
Shama brand. They have like Vibram soles. They have different grips and stuff, but I have found when it's like with minimalist running, barefoot running, running in sandals, it activates all the muscles in your feet, activates all the muscles in your calves, in your shins. When I started running in sandals, I found muscles that I didn't realize I had. I was sore for over a month, and Becca runs in sandals. She says, give it time. These muscles have not been asked to be used because you're wearing such thick shoes all the time. So for me, I don't necessarily race in them, but I train in them to build up the durability. My feet hold up fantastic in races now. Not just the durability of my skin, but like my muscles, my feet don't get fatigued, and my shins and my calves. I feel it in training for sure. Like right now, my feet are pretty sore because I've been doing a ton of hill repeats and sandals. Ask my wife. She's like, your feet have gotten so much more swole. They're probably the most jacked part of my body. My feet. I had a buddy that was really had a lot of ankle problems, and he started running in sandals, and he said, my feet have gotten so much stronger. And I was always very skeptical. I'm like, sandals, really? How do you not kick things, trip over things, get rocks in there? Your feet just adapt, man. Yeah. Like I started running in them. I'm like, this is actually not so bad. It actually feels pretty nice. It causes you to have a better foot strike too, because you know, if you're in shoes, you don't feel everything, but you feel more in sandals. So you're more careful mm-hmm. with your footsteps, and you have a softer landing than if you just had sneakers on. So I think I would say it's a part of my training strategy is wearing sandals. I don't think that I would be the same runner if I didn't wear sandals or very minimal shoes to train in.
Big insight. Yeah. So switching gears just for a second, if you don't mind, still talking about Mid-State Mile. It is in June, correct? It's going to be warm. You live in New York where it is not warm. It is probably getting warm up there now though and stuff, but how are you preparing for the heat?
So I have this sauna blanket. It's basically an infrared sleeping bag that you get into. It's like a heating pad, and you get it in and you get really hot. It goes up to 140 and it's hot. So I've been doing that for the last several months, several days a week. I will continue to do that up till Mid-State. I think that's been helping a lot. I try to run in the heat of the day as much as I can. I did Zion. Zion was hot. And then I did a race a couple weeks ago where it was pretty hot. And then to obviously cooling strategies as well. It's like I can get my body acclimated, but also trying to implement cooling strategies that I've been learning the last couple of years.
What's the biggest go-to tip for cooling at Mid-State?
One thing that was helpful, I do have an ice bandana, which I think is helpful, but I put the ice in a Ziploc bag, because what happens if you don't, your shoes get soaked and then your feet get soaked. That's what happened to me the first year, and then my feet got destroyed. Mm-hmm. So last year, Justin's running by me. He's got an ice bandana. He's like, hey, man, how are you not soaking wet? And I'm like, I put the ice in a bag, like a Ziploc bag. And he's like, dude, that's brilliant. So he started doing it because he was going through shoes like crazy. So that would be a good tip. Put some ice in a Ziploc bag. In the drier climates, maybe it's okay because it can drip down and it'll evaporate. But when you're in a humid climate, it's just going to run down into your shoes. So that's a good tip. And then I'll try to do ice under my hat. Do ice in arm sleeves, just ice wherever I can. I do have another strategy that I'm going to employ, but I'm not going to share it. I'm here because I want to, you know, keep it to myself.
Well, you'll have to follow up and let us know how it went.
Well, there's two more tips I'll tell people. Take your ice packs and stuff, put them in your armpits and in your groin, and that also brings your heat down quick.
Well, I do that in between the laps. Yeah, so if I'm sitting there, I'll put ice packs under my arms, like you said, and put a towel on my head. And, yeah.
Dude, we're super excited to watch you go through Mid-State. It's always really fun to follow that race because they do a good job of posting the updates and the videos. And so if you're listening, be following on Instagram. It's so fun to keep up with that stuff. So it's at Aaron Dana, but the O is a zero, right? So on Instagram, it's at Aaron Dana. O is a zero. Go follow. Like I said, you've got some cool stuff that you put on there. It's fun to plug in and see what you're training. And then you do post some of the kind of band work and things that I thought were pretty interesting, so people can get a taste of what you're talking about with the strength work. But for the Ultra Running Guys family, as always, thank you so much for your time. We value you more than you are aware. And like I said at the beginning, if you're finding value, please the review, share with your friends, let them know what you're listening to. It helps us tremendously. And we just appreciate you guys. And our motto is just show up. Aaron, it's going to be showing up every 20 minutes for an unknown amount of loops, and we're excited to watch.
I'm excited to go to the next phase for our patrons.
Oh. All right. And Aaron, man, thanks so much for the time tonight. We're going to keep you around because we're going to do a round with Patreon, but we appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was a blast.
All right. To everybody else, we'll talk soon. Cut. Tell Benjamin we said we appreciate him.
Make sure you get a little bit of Ben in there because he'll be excited to hear that if you can.
Have you checked your blood pressure?
No, I don't even know how to do that. So
I spent 2.5 hours writing this intro. So just impressed. Just kidding. I didn't spend 2.5 hours.
Jeremy's going to have a lot of editing to do on this
one. Right, that's right.
Oh, no. This is everything that's going to go into blooper roll. Blooper.
Nice.
Roll?
Real? Roll?
That's the word. Listen, Aaron, you've heard our show start, right? We have an intro and everything. It's recorded live. You get to hear it. And
oh, it is.
Okay. Listen, it is only top notch with us.
Oh, no, he just disappeared.
Oh, you're back. I was like, you just disappeared.
There's a couple times you like kind of jumped, and I was like, oh no.
And if it breaks, fire me today because I am.
But you guys do a really great job. You're naturals at it. So
thank you very much.
We appreciate that.
He said, and cut, but stay on.
Yeah, I've been stressed.
I had some mojo. You had some mojo. Now we can focus on running.
That's right. You brought that evilness up in our podcast. This is your fault. Oh my God.
I don't know what it's like to be wrong. So,
well,
one day I'll figure it out.
I've learned that lesson. I've been trying to figure out how to tell you when you're wrong, but it never works. No, I think you misunderstood me, Jeff.
I'm sure I did.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.